Fred Film Radio, BFI, London Film Festival, United Kingdom.
This is Sarah Bradbury for Fred Film Radio, and I'm reporting from the London Film Festival. I'm joined here today by Scott Z. Burns, the director of the new film, The Report.
So, Scott, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us, and congratulations on this brilliant film, The Report. So for people who aren't already familiar with the film, maybe you can give us a brief introduction. What can people expect when they come and see it in the cinema?
So The Report is a political thriller that centers around a United States Senate report that was done on a program the CIA conducted after 9/11 that used a thing called enhanced interrogation techniques, what a lot of people would more commonly call torture. And it's the story of a Senate staffer named Daniel Jones, played by Adam Driver, and the ordeal he went through in making the report public.
And how did you come up with the story? I believe you stumbled across this report from the Senate committee and you kind of went down a bit of a rabbit hole. So, you know, how did you discover it, and what compelled you to then turn this into a film?
I first became aware of the CIA's program through a piece in Vanity Fair that dealt with the two psychologists who are the self-described architects of this enhanced interrogation program. And as I started doing my research, I also became aware of a report that the Senate Intelligence Committee had done on the program. And the lead investigator was this gentleman, Daniel Jones. And what ended up happening was, through my research, I eventually came in contact with Dan. I got his name and contact information from the senator's chief of staff. And he and I started having a series of conversations about the work he had done. And eventually, it became more interesting to me to do a film about the process of getting this story out, because what Dan went through was this incredibly Kafkaesque ordeal in trying to get the truth out.
And almost your role in kind of doing this research was sort of more akin to investigative journalism, I suppose, rather than maybe, you know, your sort of traditional, you know, screenwriting. So, you know, like, what was that process like for you, and were you quite shocked about some of the information you found?
As a screenwriter, I've always loved doing research. You know, when I did a film like Contagion, I spent a lot of time working with virologists and experts from the World Health Organization. And I think when I was a kid at school, I always liked going on field trips and meeting experts in different fields. So in some ways, this was familiar to me, that my work was going to require doing an incredible amount of research. And it wasn't just Dan. I spoke to United States senators. I spoke to people in the military. I spoke to FBI interrogators about the techniques they employ. So, you know, I always knew there was going to be a great deal of research. The nice thing about this project was, because Dan had looked through something like 6 million documents to compile the report, and then had written a 7,000-page version that's classified, all I really had to do was deal with a 500-page version, which may seem like a lot, but compared to what Dan went through, not that bad.
And did you come up against any resistance in kind of like digging around in this area? Because I'm sure, as you know, the character in the film might find, you know, there's going to be some people who don't want this truth to be outed.
Well, obviously, there's a lot of the story that remains classified. And, you know, that's not something, as a screenwriter, that's available to me. And I didn't want anybody to tell me anything I shouldn't know. So in any interview, I always said, please, you know, do not tell me anything that's classified. And most of the people I spoke to are highly trained professionals, and they understand that this is a movie and ultimately, on some level, an act of fiction. So, you know, I never encountered resistance. So I guess we know that freedom of speech exists for the time being.
Mm. And what kind of films might you have taken some inspiration from? Because you would almost see the character of Daniel Jones a bit like an Erin Brockovich in a way, you know, like discovering this truth, not knowing what to do with it. But then also, you know, it's like maybe harking back to some of the political thrillers of the 70s, like All the President's Men. So, you know, like, what kind of inspirations do you take?
Well, I loved the political thrillers of the 70s, and my entire crew on this movie came over to my house for weeks beforehand, and we would screen All the President's Men and The Parallax View. Serpico is a movie from around that time that had a big influence on me because it was about somebody who stood up against a system. Obviously, Aaron Brockovich is a movie that I love, and because of my relationship with Steven Soderbergh, it was another really great reference point. But if you look at this film and you look at, you know, political thrillers from the 70s in America, the films of Alan Pakula and Sidney Lumet in particular, there's a lot that is an homage to them.
Mm. And talk me through this amazing cast that you put together, you know, Annette Bening, John Hamm, but at the center, Adam Driver, who really seems an actor at the top of his game at the minute. Yeah. So, you know, did you have these people in mind, and what was it like working with people like Adam?
Well, Adam was someone who came to me by way of Steven Soderbergh. Adam had worked on Logan Lucky with Steven, which is about as different from the role he plays in The Report as anything you can imagine. But I was a big fan of Adam's work. And what Steven said to me is, you know, Adam has this kind of natural curiosity that I think is going to serve the character really well. And also, Adam's face is just something that you can watch endlessly. There's basically nothing that guy ever does that's boring. And because I knew this was going to be a lot of scenes of people talking and listening in rooms, and that we were going to stay in Adam's point of view, it was really critical for me to have an actor who can be that compelling, whether he's speaking or listening. So that's sort of where Adam came from. Annette was the only person I ever thought about for Feinstein, and I sent her the script, and we had lunch. And as it turns out, she is a political junkie and was very curious and very knowledgeable. She went to university in San Francisco when Senator Feinstein was the mayor of that city. So she had a long-standing, you know, knowledge and awareness around the senator. And then the rest of the cast, you know, I knew because the movie, you know, was going to be scenes of people talking and that I wanted there to be a kind of a constant refreshing of the tension, that every character had to be someone who the audience would engage with. So, you know, it just started, you know, it's great once you get a few people, and then other people really genuinely just wanted to help tell the story, and suddenly I had Maura Tierney and, you know, help John Hamm, Matthew Rhys, Jennifer Morrison. There are so many people. London's own Douglas Hodge is spectacular in the film. So, you know, it was very gratifying to me telling a story like this, which is not a story, unfortunately, that Hollywood makes that much anymore, that all of these actors would want to throw in. You know, Tim Blake Nelson is an actor who has also been having a moment a bit lately. And, you know, when I called Tim and said, would you do this? He said, well, is there something bigger? And I said, unfortunately, no. Is that insulting to you? And he said, no, I want to help tell this story. And when you have that kind of response from your community, you know, it's really encouraging when that happens. I mean, Corey Stoll is an amazing actor who can carry a movie all by himself. And Corey's scene was a day. And he showed up and he and Adam Driver did their one scene, and it's incredible.
And we are living through pretty sort of mad political times.
Wait, what? Really?
And, you know, what do you think, you know, why is it important to tell these stories? And what kind of impact do you think it might have? You could sort of see it as a bit of an antidote to this sort of post-truth era we're in, and, you know, certainly trying to, like, pull out some of the madness of the way, you know, countries like America are acting in terms of morality and, you know, what direction we're heading in.
The CIA's program, you know, had an influence all over the world. And, you know, people talk about the Five Eyes as an intelligence gathering kind of unit that involves the United States and the UK and Canada and Australia and New Zealand. And when you have a program like the CIA's program, it affects all of our allies, because if it means that there is a detainee or a prisoner that the UK has and they turn them over to the US and that detainee is tortured, then the UK is also implicated. And so this does have sort of international repercussions, and we're living in a world now where people still practice some of these techniques, and it becomes very challenging for European countries to stand up and criticize when the U.S. did this, and where is the oversight and the accountability for the U.S.? So in regards to this specific story, I think it has significant international implications that we all have to look at, because the world is so interconnected when we're talking about fighting terrorism around the world. As to these kinds of stories and the truths that they try to expose, you know, we somehow have slipped into this moment where whatever narrative you want, whether it's about Brexit or about Ukraine, you can go online and find it. And that is, on one hand, I think, fortifying, because it says something about freedom of thought and freedom of the press. On the other hand, we tend to come to these moments with a great deal of confirmation bias. And one would have thought that facts are the cure for confirmation bias, and yet now we've lost the sanctity of facts. And that, to me, is truly a terrifying moment. That sends civilization spinning out of control, because we have to figure out a way to agree on things. And I am really grateful that there are filmmakers in the world who are trying to shine a light on these stories. You know, I don't know that we solve them all by ourselves, but I think if we can get people to theaters and sit in these rooms together and consider some of these stories, that maybe it opens up a dialogue that eventually helps us resolve our differences.
And what does it mean to you to have this film here as part of the London Film Festival? And what do you think might be the importance of festivals like this as platforms to kind of celebrate and showcase different kinds of film?
Well, I actually have spent a lot of time in London. You know, I worked on the Bourne Ultimatum here years ago, and I actually went to university briefly here. Mm-hmm. So I love the city. It's, you know, it's probably the place outside of the States that I've spent the most time. I love this festival. I was here with The Informant years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's a thrill to be back here. But more importantly, because of this moment politically, and because of both of our countries' need for accountability and transparency right now, I hope this film finds resonance with people here, because it's really not ultimately a story about America. It's a story about accountability and transparency in government. And those are things that we desperately need right now. And so when you have the story of someone who went to work every day with integrity and did their job, like Daniel Jones, I think that that story has universal appeal, and I'm excited to see how people here react to it.
Yeah, indeed. Well, congratulations on a wonderful film, and best of luck with it here in London.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for your time. Cheers.
Thank you.
And I've been Sarah Bradbury for Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.